Greetings, and welcome back to our Standing Watch program. The Bible tells you that in the end times, a charismatic political figure called the Beast will arise. He will rule in Europe over 10 nations or groups of nations, and he will actually fight against the returning Jesus Christ. But of course, he will lose. Now, in our weekly updates, and you can receive a copy of our weekly updates by just writing to us, standingwatch.org, and we will be happy to send you a free copy via email. In those weekly updates, we have been writing about the beast. And today I'd like to give you some biblical evidence to show you what to watch for in order to identify this coming charismatic, political, military leader and ruler in Europe. In Revelation chapter 16, we read that the beast has a throne and a kingdom, and that he will be demon-possessed. It is actually revealed that a demon possessing him will go out and perform signs and miracles. We also read in Revelation chapter 19 that the beast, in collaboration with another charismatic figure called the false prophet, a religious personage, he will lead the armies to invade the Middle East, to invade Jerusalem, and he will fight against the returning Jesus Christ. Now, prior to Christ's return, as I said, he will establish his headquarters in the Middle East, in Jerusalem, and he will take away the daily sacrifices. The Jews will in fact begin again with daily sacrifices, and the beast will come to take that away. We read a prophecy in Daniel chapter 8, which very well may be dual in application. Now, it first speaks about another political leader of ancient times, Antiochus Epiphanes. He is described in the passage as a little horn. Now, you don't confuse that, please, with the little horn of Daniel 7, which is a religious power. Here in Daniel 8, it's talking about the political power of Antiochus Epiphanes. It speaks about this power which persecutes God's people, which invades and casts down the sanctuary and opposes the daily sacrifices which are taken away. Now, Antiochus did all that. To give you a little bit of a historical background, he was born in 215 BC and he died in 163 BC. And the second book of the Maccabees, which is not an inspired record, which is an historical record, which has some problems, some inaccuracies, but it gives you an interesting flavor of what happened. This is what we read. Raging like a wild animal, he set out from Egypt and took Jerusalem by storm. He ordered his soldiers to cut down without mercy those whom they met and to slay those who took refuge in their houses. There was a massacre of young and old, a killing of women and children, a slaughter of virgins and infants. In the space of 3 days, 80,000 were lost, 40,000 meeting a violent death, and the same number being sold into slavery. The record goes on to say, not long after this, the king sent an Athenian senator to force the Jews to abandon the customs of their ancestors and live no longer by the laws of God, also to profane the temple in Jerusalem and dedicate it to the Olympian god Zeus. They also brought into the temple things that were forbidden, so that the altar was covered with abominable offerings prohibited by the laws. Other records tell us that he actually sacrificed swine's flesh and swine's blood on the altar. It goes on to say a man couldn't keep the Sabbath or celebrate the traditional feast, talking about the annual holy days of God, not even admit that he was a Jew. Something similar will happen again, but this time it's not going to be only persecution of the Jews, it's also persecution of true Christians. Now, we go on to say in our updates that we read in Daniel chapter 8 that a fierce king, or a king having fierce features, which is Antiochus, would arise with sinister schemes and cunning and deceit, and that he would be broken without human means. Now, Antiochus did die suddenly of a disease. But if this is a dual prophecy, which I believe it is, it would also refer to the death of the beast. You see, because when Christ comes back, he will be thrown, the beast will be thrown into the lake of fire to be burnt up there. In other words, again, he wouldn't die because of human means. The commentary of Scofield states that, and I quote, Antiochus is a remarkable type of the beast. Because you see, in fact, much of what Antiochus did, the future beast will do, but much worse. Daniel 11 describes that Antiochus Epiphanes supplanted the ruler and that he came to power through intrigue. The Wikipedia Encyclopedia tells us this, and I quote, after King Seleucus was assassinated by Heliodorus, an usurper, in 175 BC, Antiochus in turn ousted him. Since Seleucus' legitimate heir, Demetrius I Soter, was still a hostage in Rome, Antiochus, with the help of King Eumenes II of Pergamon, seized the throne for himself, proclaiming himself co-regent for another son of Seleucus, an infant named Antiochus, whom he then murdered a few years later. Close quote. Now, the end-time beast might also obtain his rule over the 10 nations or groups of nations in Europe through intrigue or flattery. Because, you see, Jesus Christ confirmed that the acts of Antiochus may be dual in nature and that the abomination of desolation, which Antiochus set up in the temple, will be set up again. The abomination of desolation has been understood by many as describing both a devastating army occupying Jerusalem, as well as the erection of an idol or a statue or an image. It could also refer to an ungodly presence or pagan worship services in the temple. Because remember, all of this Antiochus did. But Christ said it's going to happen again. So all of this apparently is going to happen again under the rule of the end-time beast. In Matthew chapter 24, Christ refers to the abomination of desolation in the context of the destruction of Jerusalem through Titus' devastating and abominable army in 70 AD. But he also speaks of a future military occupation of the Holy Land and of Jerusalem and of the desecration of the holy place just prior to his return. Daniel 12 contains an end-time prophecy and establishes that another prophetic abomination of desolation will be set up at the holy place, where it ought not be, as Mark tells us, at the same time when the future Jewish daily sacrifices will be taken away. Because, you see, judging from the past and from several passages in the Bible, the Jews will indeed build another temple in Jerusalem prior to Christ's return, but it will be desecrated. So we see all these parallels between Antiochus Epiphanes and the end-time beast, but there is more. You see, we read in Daniel chapter 11 that the king of the north will take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation, that he shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, that he shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and that he shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. But in their place he shall honor a god of fortresses, and a god which his fathers didn't know he shall honor with gold and silver. And that he will act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance his glory. Now, even though these passages, as I've just read them, have been applied to Antiochus and can be applied to Antiochus to an extent, they cannot be applied to him exclusively. The Ryrie Study Bible says that, quote, the scope requires reference to some details of Israel's last days. And the New Bible Commentary Revised tells you this, Antiochus, who persecuted the Old Testament church shortly before the first advent of Christ, may be regarded as typical of the Antichrist, they mean the beast, who will persecute the church before the second advent of Christ. Verse 36 states that the king will magnify himself against every god, a description which doesn't well apply to Antiochus. Likewise, it is difficult to see how Antiochus showed this respect for the gods of his fathers. But you see, it's not difficult to apply it to the end-time beast. You see, he will worship a foreign god for a while. That is, the false prophet, who will claim to be God. He will be sitting in the temple of God, saying that he is God, and apparently the beast will give him honor and respect. You see, again, that's something his fathers didn't do, because his fathers didn't know anything about the false prophet, because the false prophet hadn't arisen then. There's another statement which we just read, which we need to talk about, because we have just read that he doesn't regard the desire of women. Now, some say the desire of women, that's reference to a god whom women worshipped, like Tammuz in the Old Testament. Others claim this means he doesn't love what women love, that he lives in licentiousness with women and doesn't want to get married, because many women want to get married. Now, of course, Antiochus Epiphanes, that doesn't really apply to any of him, but a much more obvious explanation should be considered. The German Elberfelder Bible translates that he doesn't care for the love of or towards women. In other words, Frauenliebe in German. Now, this could be a reference to other than normal sexual practices. The commentary of Henry speaks of unnatural lust in the context. This might indicate that the beast will be homosexual. And you might read the scriptures in Romans chapter 1 about that topic. There is no indication that Antiochus was homosexual, nor that he had any illicit affairs, and he was married. But if this is a reference to the end-time beast, then we will have to conclude that the end-time beast will be homosexual. You see, again, the fact that he might be married may not dismiss that possibility, because we have read about other people who have been married, they even had children, and they still were homosexual. In case, if you think of the late Jörg Haider of Austria, he was married, he had a daughter, and only after his death it became known that he was homosexual. A last comment on the beast, because we read in Habakkuk chapter 1 that after the modern Babylonian leader, the beast has come to power, his mind will change. This term could be a reference to demonic possession. Barth's notes on the Bible says it could describe the invisible presence of a spirit. Now, we know, of course, from the book of Revelation that he will be demon-possessed, but it appears that the demon possession actually will take place after the beast has come to power. Then his mind will change. Then the demon will take over. So it's something very interesting to watch for, and we will continue addressing this topic in future programs. For now, this is Norbert Link for the Standing Watch program, and thank you very much for listening.